What's up, everybody? This is Danny Cunningham. You're listening to Burning River Basketball, episode number 3. I'm joined, as always, by Ben Belden. Ben, how are you doing today, Buckets?
I am doing very, very well, Prez.
I like it. Since last time we talked to you, the Cavs have had 4 games. They're 4-0 in such contests. They've been shooting the ball pretty well as of late, with the exception being their game against Philadelphia yesterday, where they decided to start off 2 of 17, probably because they burnt most of their energy at the Ohio State-Michigan game the day before. But all in all, they've played pretty well, and you can't really complain too much. Is there something you've really noticed as of late, Ben?
You know, I think it's just a case of they're just continuing to play really, really loose. And we talked about it on previous podcasts, where there's just not a lot of pressure on them. And I think that part of what gets overlooked, I think, is that Ty Lue is running kind of a little bit of a different offense. He's not limited to what David Blatt had put in. They were limited at the end of last season because certainly Ty Lue didn't have time to put in his full offense, what he wants them to run. And I think that's having an effect on them, and I think it's a good effect. And, you know, even today, where they started off 2 of 17, they still scored 112 points. So when they're clicking, they're clicking.
Yeah, I thought scoring 112 points after the atrocious start they had was one of the more impressive things I have seen from this team. Now, their game against the Sixers yesterday wasn't impressive. It was a good win because they were shorthanded with Noah Monshumpert. Obviously, Channing Frye is still away from the team after the loss of his father. And the Cavs had played, this was their third game in 6 days, I believe, dating back to Wednesday when they played against Portland. So it was a good win. And the Sixers aren't a good team per se. They do have some young talent, but they're not a good team. I'm still saying it was a good win because of the amount of activity they've been involved in lately and being shorthanded and stuff like that. And scoring 112 points was definitely impressive. And I thought Kyrie Irving's fourth quarter in that game was extremely impressive too. He had 19 points in the fourth quarter and really brought the Cavs back, because it seemed like throughout the entire game, the Cavs would make a run, and then they would get within 3 or within 4, and then Philadelphia went on a run, and the Cavs could never really find a way to tie the game or take the lead. But it had the feeling that once the Cavs finally took the lead, they weren't going to give it back. And they took the lead, Philadelphia scored on the next possession, and the Cavs scored, got a stop, scored again, and never looked back from that point. So I really want to give kudos to Kyrie for a very good game yesterday with 39 points, and including 19 in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and that's what good teams do. I mean, really good teams aren't playing with Philadelphia, but like you said, they were kind of they're not playing close games with Philadelphia, I guess is what I meant to say. But
and the Cavs have done that twice now.
Right.
The Cavs are 2-0 in Philadelphia with the wins coming by a combined 5 points.
Right. So but good teams do just find a way to win when they are not necessarily clicking. And like you kind of said, the Cavs have a little bit there's a little bit of circumstances going on as far as not having Channing Frye or Monshumpert for today's game. The Cavaliers find a way to win down the stretch. That's something that I don't know, last year at this time you might have seen the Cavs drop a game like that. And they haven't really dropped a real head scratch of a game yet. I think the Toronto game, which was their first loss.
They didn't lose to Toronto.
My goodness. I meant the Hawks.
There you go.
The Hawks, that was their first loss.
The Hawks.
So it seems as if we lost Danny here for a second. And so I'm just going to keep on talking, and he's going to come back in. But like I was saying, the Hawks was their first loss, and they kind of just didn't really they didn't show up quick enough, and that has been kind of the case for the Cavs. They don't show up for the first two and a half quarters a lot of the time, and then it's a different ballgame going down the stretch. So that kind of has been the Cavaliers' MO. They've been able to get through that, I suppose you could say. And we have Danny Cunningham back on the other line now, which is great.
Hey, hi, hello, what happened?
Oh, I don't know.
What'd I miss?
I was just talking about how the Cavaliers were – they're like a 2.5 quarters, like bad quarters basketball team, and then they just flip the switch.
In certain games, yes, but I mean, if you look at the game against Dallas, there wasn't much bad basketball that they played. Granted, Dallas is the worst team in the NBA right now.
Mercy, they're so bad.
Yeah, they're terrible. But, I mean, the Cavs made sure that that wasn't going to be a game. They were winning by 45 points at one point, I think.
Right.
In the, right. I covered the Portland game.
And that wasn't much different.
Well, Portland hung in it because they were able to score, and the Cavs did not play well defensively by any stretch of the imagination. But, man, that first quarter from Kevin Love was the most impressive individual performance I had ever seen in person.
Yeah. Have the Cavaliers played a full four quarters of defense yet this year?
I think against Detroit, the night that we did the last podcast, they did. They won that game 104-81, and they looked really good defensively.
Okay. Yeah, I'll give that
and
one.
Opening night against the Knicks. They held the Knicks to 88 points.
Okay. All right. I feel like even opening night against the Knicks, though, weren't they giving up a lot of points right at the beginning?
They kind of – the adrenaline kind of wore off in the second quarter, and the Knicks got back into it. But after halftime, the Cavs destroyed New York. And even against Toronto, the second game of the season, they won that one 94-91. I mean, they played good defense there. They didn't score their normal amount of points. That's the only game they haven't cracked 100 points. Which is honestly kind of remarkable now that they're 15 games in the season, there's only one game they haven't cracked 100.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I don't know. I guess to the point I was making, I think the Cavaliers just – they go through periods for sure when they when they're just like, we're just going to play basketball and not really worry about it. And then sometimes they look up at the scoreboard and they're just like, all right, well, now we need to worry about it a little bit and flip the switch. And I don't know. It continues to work for them because they're just that good. And it continues to work for them because they can put versatile lineups out there with, you know, especially with Channing Frye at the five. The Cavaliers can do some things with, you know, they have a lot of big man versatility, and that's really helping them quite a bit. So there's not really much to complain about at 13-2, but I guess if there's just one thing, like, you just, I can't wait till they play like a perennial powerhouse team like the Clippers. Or
I am very excited for the Clippers game coming up this Thursday.
Yes, yes, exactly. So I'll be interested to see how they come out, if they come out from the jump and they're, I don't know, I can tell a difference in the body language when they're playing good defense. I think that probably a lot of people can. And I'll be interested to see if they come out with that body language for that Clippers game or whether they're just kind of like, well, we'll see how it goes. And there's a little bit more of a feeling out period.
And I'm excited for this upcoming stretch of games. The Cavs have four of their next five on the road. And Milwaukee's kind of a middle of the pack team, but the Clippers are very good. The Bulls are very interesting. I won't say they're very good, but they're very interesting. And that's on the road. And, I mean, LeBron historically has owned Chicago, much the way Jordan owned the Cavs back in the day. LeBron has really dominated the Bulls. And that's the second night of the back-to-back. And then on Monday, they travel north of the border to take on the Raptors for the third time already this season. So I'm interested to see how this stretch goes.
Right. What is up with the NBA schedule where they're basically going to be done with the Raptors? Like,
they played the Raptors in the preseason. This will be the fourth matchup against the Raptors.
Yeah, I don't get the NBA schedule sometimes. I mean, we were just talking before we started recording that the Cavaliers have only played five road games so far this year, and they've played 10 home games. I don't know. The NBA schedule is weird, man.
And they play the Bucks on Tuesday, and then they play in Milwaukee December 20th and at home against Milwaukee December 21st. So they'll have three games against the Bucks over before Christmas.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense. You'd think that you would want to have some of those divisional games down the stretch of a season. Spread out a little bit, or even down the stretch a little bit. I mean, I know it's not like how you do in your division isn't the same as how you do in your division, say, like the NFL. But you'd think towards the end of the season you'd want to cut down on teams' travel time, and those divisions are obviously grouped by proximity. So I don't know.
I mean, if you do want to look ahead to that, the Cavs only play one divisional opponent in April. Obviously, the season ends April 12th, but the only divisional opponent they have is the Pacers at home on April 2nd. And the last time they play against a Western Conference team is March 27th when they play in San Antonio.
Oh, okay.
So there's not a ton of travel in that last 3 weeks, we'll call it, 2.5, 3 weeks, which is a good thing.
Right. And I'm pretty sure the NBA does do that for teams where they're not, you know, you're not ending the game. If you're like the Knicks, you're not ending the – you're on a West Coast trip or something like that.
And that'll be interesting to see because starting March 24th, they've got quite a few back-to-backs towards the end of the season. I believe they have four back-to-backs from March 24th until the end of the season.
Okay.
So in that last 3 weeks, they have four back-to-backs, which is interesting.
Yeah, so that's something that we'll want to keep an eye on as far as, you know, hopefully they balloon that the lead
including
out.
Including a four games and 5 day stretch between April 4th and April 9th.
Yeah, I'm guessing that most of the crew is only going to play in about two of those.
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, if it keeps going the way it's going, the Cavaliers are going to have the Eastern Conference locked up by that point anyways.
Yeah, they shouldn't. I actually haven't checked out the standings, which is something I should do. But
they're currently 3.5 games ahead of the Raptors, who are in second.
Yeah, which is obviously good. And the Raptors haven't been all that good thus far. They're 10-6. How many games do you think this Cavalier team can win?
I definitely think they'll get to the 60s easily. I guess I would probably say I think they can get to like the 65 and 17 sounds about right.
I think they go 60-22. I think they hit that 60 mark. I just don't think there's too much of a desire for wins out of them.
Right. Yeah. And I guess I almost said that with a caveat that if they want to win 65, they can win 65, but who knows like if they're going to be being pushed down the stretch or not. So I guess we'll see in that. I don't know if that happens or not.
Yeah. And I think a big part of it too is how many games like today do they win where they don't have their best stuff, where they're not at full strength, where their head's quite frankly not in it for much of the game. Because last year, I'm not sure they win this game. In the 2014-2015 season, they definitely don't win this game.
Yeah, well, I mean, I look down and – it's really a good place that we're in as Cavs fans now because it didn't used to be this way. But like you look down at like the Eastern Conference and like you see, I mean, the Cavaliers have beaten the Raptors twice already this year and they're the team that's closest to them as far as talent wise. So
the Cavs could lock up the tiebreaker against the Raptors next Monday.
That's an interesting way to think about it, but yeah, you're right. So the two teams that I think match up with the Cavaliers the best are the Raptors and the Hawks. And I think the Raptors probably even a little more than the Hawks because I think the Raptors have a little bit more depth than the Hawks do. But outside of them, you know, the Bulls a little bit. But then you're looking at like Celtics, Hornets, Knicks, Pacers, Bucks, Pistons, like – and then you even get down below that, and it's Magic, Wizards, Heat, Nets, Sixers. And those are the bulk of the Cavaliers' games against those types of teams. So some of those teams are just downright awful. The Sixers are 4-13. The Nets are 4-12. So it's I don't know. It's hard to like look at the Cavaliers' schedule and pick out like games they might lose. You obviously have to look at like 4-5 and back-to-backs and things like that.
Well, they're going to have schedule losses.
Yes.
There are going to be games they will most likely lose simply because it's a tough stretch for them. Like if you look at coming up, they could lose that game Monday they could lose that game Friday night against the Bulls because they're going to have a tough test Thursday night on national TV against the Clippers. And then they're going to have to travel to Chicago, play another game on national TV in Chicago. Mm-hmm. They could mm-hmm. lose that game.
And, I mean, you mentioned how LeBron's kind of owned the Bulls, and you're not wrong in saying that, but when they play in Chicago, it kind of seems like it's much tougher of a cry for LeBron. LeBron's complained about Chicago a couple times because the floor, you know, at the United Center, the floor is on top of the ice for hockey, so they say that it's really cold in there. LeBron's complained about that vocally a couple of times, so I could definitely see them losing that game to the Bulls for sure.
Also, he doesn't often play that great against Dwayne Wade. I think LeBron has a bit of a Dwayne Wade complex in a very similar sense that Kevin Durant has a huge LeBron complex. Like, Kevin Durant is 4-17 in his career against LeBron. Now, LeBron's not nearly that bad in his career against Wade, and Wade's been on some less than stellar teams, and obviously they've played with each other. But I'm not – well, I can't say it's a Wade complex, but he definitely has had a playing in Miami complex. Because last year, the Cavs were a much better team than the Heat, but they really, really struggled in Miami. But when the Heat came to Cleveland, the games weren't even close.
Yeah, yeah. So, I don't know. There's basketball's funny in the fact that there's so much extra that goes into the games. You know, I can't really think of another sport where there's, I don't know, stuff that's off the court or, I don't know, relationships between opposing players and things that goes into it as much as that. But, yeah, so basketball is – there's so many things that – and even you don't even necessarily know little things, because you can have little nicks and bruises as a basketball player. You don't know when somebody tweaked an ankle at practice. You don't know some of the little things that can really impact a basketball game. You just don't necessarily know about. So it's really hard to predict when things are going to happen. Also, basketball happens in the middle of like flu season. So things like that happen too.
And getting back to what you said about relationships and stuff, I think part of that is because of the way the NBA markets itself. The NBA really doesn't market teams. The NBA markets guys like LeBron James and Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and stars like that. They don't market the Cavs. They don't market the Warriors. Maybe the Warriors more so because they're a super team or whatever you want to call them. But they market players. And it's very evident who's friends with who. Everyone in the world knows LeBron and Dwayne Wade are best friends. Everyone.
Yep.
And I think that's part of it as to why it's more prevalent in the NBA than it is other leagues.
Right. And I don't know. How nice is it, I guess, that even though the Cavaliers won the title last year, they're still like the feel-good team of the NBA. Do you get that vibe?
I don't know if feel-good's the right word, but I think they're the most likable team.
Yeah.
LeBron is the ultimate good guy for coming home and winning a title at home. And the way he supported the rest of Cleveland and going to the Ohio State game Saturday and doing all types of things like that. And the way J.R. Smith has turned his career and kind of life around in Cleveland, and how Kyrie's developed into a superstar, and how Kevin Love is playing like an all-star in Cleveland. It's hard not to like them. They don't have someone that you hate. They don't have a Draymond Green that is a villain. They don't have someone that went on, sat at a press conference and said, oh, he just got his feelings hurt. They don't have that on this team. That's why they're so likable.
Yeah, and as you were saying that, you kind of started to touch on it, but I was going to say that, you know, part of what makes them the likable team is that they have a definite arch nemesis, and that definite arch nemesis happens to be the team that wants to be the villains. So I think that kind of plays into it also. And talking about LeBron for a second, I don't know, like, could his brand be doing any better the way his career has gone? I mean, he had those years where he kind of was the villain, and that was a little bit good for him. But now you've got like that villain turned savior type of a thing, and everybody loves him now. And it's just great. And I don't know. There's not people like that hate LeBron like there used to be, it seems like.
there's not really a reason to. He made a mistake with the decision. Whether or not you want to argue about leaving Cleveland, you can argue, but the decision wasn't tastefully done, and I can understand why people hated him. Absolutely get it. But the way he came back was incredible. The letter, the celebration in Akron at the University of Akron's football stadium, all of that stuff. And then opening night was one of the Cavs lost the game, but for so many people, that was one of the most incredible nights. I still will go back from time to time and watch the introduction from that night. And there are a couple things that stick out to me. One is the fact that Dion Waiters and Anderson Varejao were starters for the Cavs that evening. And two is just how perfect it all seemed. Like, you couldn't write a story any better than that. I mean, I can't think of a more compelling storyline than what happened. And then for the Cavs to come back from down 3-1, with LeBron having one of the greatest three-game stretches of basketball in NBA history. How can you not love it?
True or false, the Cleveland Indians get to the World Series if the Cavaliers did not win the last finals?
They get to the World Series if, yes.
I almost wonder.
The Cavs getting to the final, the Cavs winning the finals – did nothing for the Indians. LeBron James never threw a pitch. No, LeBron didn't throw a pitch. Kyrie Irving wasn't catching fly balls. J.R. Smith didn't go deep in the ALCS.
I kind of wish Kyrie Irving was playing center field in Game 6 of the World Series, to be honest with you, but that's a story for another day.
I think Andrew Miller could be a decent shot blocker.
Yeah. I mean, as larger as, I don't know, like people talk about in baseball context how Andrew Miller is almost like larger than life. He's like LeBron James would kind of dwarf him.
I mean, LeBron's an inch taller than him.
Yeah, and way thicker.
Well, yeah, but I mean, Andrew Miller is still like 6'7", 215, 220. He's a big dude.
Yeah, he sure is. What else you want to talk about?
What do you want to talk about, Ben?
Gosh, I don't know. I do have to say that I've listened to, I don't know if you're familiar with the Open Run podcast that is put on by Uninterrupted.
I am somewhat familiar. I listened to part of the episode that LeBron was on. It was like the first one.
Yes. Yeah, I listened to that one. And I also listened to the most recent one that had Mav Carter on it. They brought Mav Carter on to talk. Well, I mean, he kind of owns the thing, so I don't know if they brought it on or if Mav Carter said he was coming on. But listen to him talk about the whole Phil Jackson thing. And I don't know. That was interesting. That was something that we talked about on the last podcast. And really, I mean, there wasn't anything new. Mav Carter did come out and say, which I thought was interesting, that he wasn't necessarily accusing Phil Jackson of being racist. He wanted to clear that up, but that he did just want to say that he was hurt by the fact that Phil Jackson clearly just thinks of him and, I don't know, the things that he's done is lesser, and he doesn't understand where the shot came from.
Yeah, like I said on the last podcast, I didn't think Phil was being racist in any way. I thought he was trying to be demeaning in several ways. But I don't think any one of those ways was trying to demean them because they're African American. I thought he was trying to make their accomplishments seem smaller, but I don't think their race had anything to do with that.
Right. Yes, you're exactly right. And that's pretty much what Mav Carter had to say about that. And then they brought up the point that Stan Van Gundy had, where they asked Stan Van Gundy about what was going on. And Stan Van Gundy said, well, I don't necessarily – I've used the word posse before to, I don't know, to talk about players. He said, and when I thought about it, I can't say that I've ever used the word posse to describe a white player and his friends. And Mav Carter was blown away by that. And I don't know, I think when Mav Carter heard that, he was like really affirmed in what he did and like the reason he brought it up was to I guess, just have that conversation. And the fact that Stan Van Gundy, a white man, a respected man, said something like that was a win for Matt Carter, I think. So that was all really interesting. It was like an over hour long podcast, and I was glued to every second of it. So if our listeners are interested in other podcasts other than us, I definitely recommend that. It's hosted by Jesse Williams, who is also a star on Grey's Anatomy. And I really love Grey's Anatomy. So, you know, it's great.
Seriously.
Yeah, I had to throw Grey's Anatomy in there.
You watch Grey's Anatomy?
Yeah, we've been through this. We've been through this over microphones. I don't hide it.
Why?
It was one of those things where a lot of people were talking about it, and I don't know. I just saw it on my Netflix, and it's like, I'm going to watch one, and then there's just a storyline that you have to follow, and I'm just, you know, I'm not even on the current season yet. I've definitely slowed my roll in how often I've watched it, but still like it.
You like The Office?
I do like The Office.
I think The Office is hilarious. I've been watching that recently.
I'm not one of those people that just watch every single episode, but when I don't know what to watch, The Office is usually right up there on something that I go to.
I'm not sure there's a better episode in TV history than the episode where Stanley has the heart attack.
I've not seen that one, I don't think.
It's season 5, episode 15. Go watch it.
How did you know that right off the top of your head?
Because I've seen it several times on Netflix, so I know where to find it.
And I got to ask you, over the microphone, like, you and I obviously do the Under the Dome podcast. We do this podcast. You remember the intricacies of a lot of flipping games and, like, stats and who made shots and what game and where it was. How?
I don't know. I just remember a lot of specifics. Is there a specific like moment in that you're thinking of that,
like, well, on the last podcast,
astounded that I remember?
Well, on the last podcast, you talked about we talked about Damon Jones hitting that three in the corner.
Dude, and Damon Jones is awesome, the world's greatest shooter.
Yeah, but you remember that it was the Eastern Conference. I don't know what the hell the first round's called.
First round. It was just first round against the Wizards. It won LeBron's first playoff series.
It was against the Raptors.
Oh, no, there were two of them.
Yeah.
We talked off air about the one against the Wizards in the playoffs. We talked on air against the buzzer beater in the right corner against the Raptors. Yeah, I remember that one too.
Yeah, yeah. And you were just like, oh, yeah, that was game 6 of the NBA first round against the Raptors.
No, the Wizards was game 6. The Raptors was a game in like January.
All right, see, okay, this is further making the point, though, that you remember, like, all of these little intricacies that, like, it's just, like, I remember that shot, like, when you talk about it, but it's, like, I can't summon the fact that it was game whatever and whatever. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I can do that, and I guess it's kind of cool, kind of a good thing. Like, I remember a ton of certain shots from LeBron's 48-point game against Detroit. Like the one where he started off left and took a dribble behind his back and then buried a jumper over Chauncey Billups at the top of the key was one of my favorite shots. And then he hit a step back on the right wing that was sick. He had a step back three on the left wing that was filthy. I remember there was an argument about a possible goaltending call that would have tied the game in the second overtime when Chauncey Billups tried to throw up a floater and Anderson Varejao got the tip of a finger on the ball at its peak.
Yeah.
I remember LeBron's dunk on Tayshaun Prince where Tayshaun Prince just like squirmed under the rim. That was one of my favorite moments too.
See, I remember like little things from games that I was at. But I almost never remember little things. I mean, I'll always remember game 7 and things like that. But I remember a Cavs Thunder game that I was at in probably like December or January one year. And I don't know. I remember games that I was at, but like I don't remember that game. Like I remember LeBron just taking over and scoring 25 straight points or whatever it was. And but I don't remember
the last 30.
Yeah, and I don't remember like how he did it. I mean, I do remember like one specific play where he's down the lane and he dunks it. And it's probably like the 25th straight point, because that's the highlight that they show every time.
I believe his last point was it was a layup. It won the game in the second overtime to make it 109-107, which was the final score. He kind of like double clutched it, and it was like a right hand underhand layup to the right side of the rim.
I wish there was someone else around here that I could just like make these faces, because like, am I like? See, I don't even know what to say, because like, you just, the more you talk, the more you make my point.
I'm not arguing your point. Like, I
know you're not arguing.
I agree with it.
I'm still blown away at like the remembrance of those specific little moments is the point that I'm trying to make. I don't know. Any other NBA topics that we want to talk about? Even just not Cavs?
I mean, we could always do a show about Golden State and Draymond Green kicking people and how he finally kicked his own teammate.
He kicked his own teammate and hurt himself in the process.
Yeah, I was not shocked when Chris Haynes tweeted that out. Chris Haynes is a tremendous follow, by the way, and he is outstanding at his job. He used to cover the Cavs for the Cleveland Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com. And now he covers the Warriors for ESPN. He is outstanding at his job. He's one of the best in the business.
I wonder if ESPN put him out there, because a lot of what he does, like a lot of like the Warrior stuff that he covers, is like in the context of a guy that used to cover the Cavs, understandably so. And I wonder if they were going for that angle on purpose.
Possibly. I think part of it is he's from Fresno. And right. Living in Oakland or San Francisco or wherever he is living at is much closer to home than living in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And it's still a really, really good job. I mean, I don't know financially. I'm sure he's getting paid more to cover the Warriors than he was getting paid to cover the Cavs. He gets to move closer to home, and he's on a bigger platform. I mean, he got paid more to better his career closer to home.
For sure. It's
the dream.
But, like, even just, like, he tweeted out a thing, just a neat little tidbit the other day where he said that Steve Kerr texted Channing Frye about after Channing Frye's father died a month later than his mother died, a month after his mother died. And I just thought that was, like, really cool. Like, you don't get stuff like that a lot of times.
Was Kerr involved in Phoenix when Channing was there? I feel like that's how they have a connection. Because other than that, it would just be really random. But I want to say Steve Kerr was involved in the Suns organization in some capacity while Channing Frye was there.
I'm sure he was, because I feel like Channing Frye was there for – he was there for most of his career, wasn't he, before he started?
Then he went to the Magic, and then Cleveland, obviously.
Yeah, but I feel like the bulk of his career was in Phoenix, I feel like. I can't think of where he was before Phoenix. I don't think he was drafted by Phoenix, but I don't know. I can tell you're looking
it up. Yeah, Kerr was in the Suns front office for a while. He was there from 04 to 07, which would have coincided with Channing Frye being in Phoenix. So
yeah, and David Griffin was probably there in some capacity at some point, right?
Yeah, that's kind of why they went out and got him.
Why they got Channing Frye. Yeah, exactly. So it's also why there's so many. When you think about Cavs Warriors and like all of the storylines there, like, man, that's fun. I don't even.
Oh, there's tons of storylines. It's awesome. Now, the saying is like a playoff series doesn't start until someone wins a game on someone else's floor. Right?
Right.
And I'm stealing this from Brian Windhorst a little bit, but a rivalry maybe didn't start until each team won a title on the other team's floor. Because in 2015, the Warriors won it in Cleveland. In 2016, the Cavs won it in Oakland.
Yes. When do the Cavs play in Oakland?
Probably President's Day or Martin Luther King Day or one of those holidays.
Yeah. I don't know. What are the odds that
January 16th they're in Oakland?
Yes, that's Martin Luther King Day, isn't it?
Yes. So it's the same two dates as last year.
Well, would you look at that? Because the other one's obviously Christmas. But What are you, what we talked about Petty LeBron last podcast.
No, Petty LeBron's the best LeBron.
Of course, that's what the last podcast was called. But what are the odds that Petty LeBron comes out and says something about the locker room smelling like champagne?
I'm not sure if he'll do that because it,
or something to that effect. Like I doubt he'll use the same quote, but he might say something.
Petty LeBron doesn't necessarily do things through the media. Petty LeBron likes to do more subtle things. Like, okay, if I had to put money on it, on January 16th when the Cavs play in Oakland, they're wearing black jerseys.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about
that. That's Petty LeBron. They're wearing their black jerseys that night. Like, it's little things like that. Like, the first shot of the game the Cavs are going to draw up is going to be Kyrie shooting a three on the right wing. It's those types of petty things that I enjoy the most. And the second one's not Petty LeBron. It's more Petty Cavs, but it's enjoyable. And it's petty. It is petty as ever.
Yeah. Well, so I don't know if this means anything at all. I don't know. But the night – well, okay. So before they're in Oakland on Monday the 16th, they're in Sacramento on Friday the 13th, interestingly enough. So the Cavaliers are going to have a couple days in Oakland – off. I don't know. We'll see if they have any like team get-togethers where there's people around and there's, I don't know, something to the effect of cookies and,
you know, it'd be super petty in Oakland.
What
if they had a superheroes party?
Unfortunately, I can't imagine like what the I don't know. There's no context for that, unfortunately.
I think it would be great.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't love a superheroes party? They could have it at Steph's house. but like LeBron's going to do things like he's going to wear all black to the arena that night and dress like the Undertaker. Like he's
probably going, the Kermit hat on, you think?
Yeah, exactly. And the only person that really compares to Petty LeBron is Petty Russell Westbrook. Petty Russell Westbrook's my favorite too. Him wearing the photographer's vest when they played Golden State was incredible.
That was something.
Him talking about how he has to go worry about his selfish teammates was incredible. Like Petty Russ is great, but Petty LeBron's a little bit better.
Yeah.
In part because I don't think anything will ever top the Ultimate Warrior shirt.
Yes. Yes. That was something else. If there's another team, there's got to be another team somewhere who's nicknamed the Warriors. I wouldn't put it past LeBron to go like support that team somehow or another. But I don't know.
I'm trying to think.
There's got to be one somewhere.
Like in college?
Yeah, like there's somebody else that's called the Warriors.
The Warriors D-League team, the Santa Cruz Warriors.
Well, that's too easy.
The Wayne State Warriors. Division II school in Detroit.
I'm doing a Google search right now. It's not really working, but... All right, well,
I think we've reached our end.
Yeah, well, that was fun. Hopefully people stuck with us this whole time.
Yeah, because talking about Petty LeBron was the best part of this podcast, the best part of the last podcast, probably the best part of every podcast in the future.
So for more Petty LeBron stuff, be sure to check us out at BR Basketball on Twitter and burningriverbasketball.com and all of that good stuff. You want to sign us off?
Yeah, that's all, folks. We'll talk to you sometime, probably in about a week or so. We do want this to be a weekly thing, but sometimes our schedules don't necessarily line up. And we definitely will not be the only two voices that you'll be hearing throughout the season and as things move along here at Burning River Basketball. So stay tuned. We have a lot of stuff in the works.